And when you see the little blue guy over there on the counter, that means the microphone is on. So we're going to open our Senate Education Committee, March 2nd, 2017. And before we get started, I have at least one of the distinguished members of this panel who wants to say something. So with that, Senator Lithicum.
Thank you, Chair Roblin. I wanted to say welcome to all the FFA coats. I see everybody here dressed appropriately for coming and making a pitch to the legislature. We appreciate your voices. Thank you for coming here. And then there's a high school in Klamath County where I am from, Henley High, which has a whole host of participants here. If you don't mind and you're not afraid to get caught on camera, would you please stand for us?
They might get the longest ride here.
I'm sure they did. They'll all be going. They told me tonight that they're headed home, and I said, well, if we stay till 5, they get lunch till 7. They'll make it home by 2, you know.
Okay. So we'll get out of here before 7.
Thank you, and we are so happy to see you here today. Thank you.
Yeah. Just a short comment. I had thought about wearing my FFA jacket today, and then it was pointed out to me it probably wouldn't fit me anymore. So,
so we do appreciate all of you being here. It is a part of, I know, what all of your staff that spend the time teaching you talk about, and that is you have to have a voice. And the only way you can have a voice is if you show up, and FFA people show up at lots of different things. And I think it's one of the best things that any citizen in the state can learn is that if you always think somebody else is going to show up for you, every once in a while you're going to be really disappointed because no one will be there. And so this is a good statement about why it's important to get engaged and get involved, and we thank you for that. So with that, we have a couple bills before we get to have our fun FFA time. So we're going to open up with open a public hearing on Senate Bill 203, and we'll have a short explanation. And while that's happening, we have a couple presidents of a couple of our community colleges. Frank, you want to come on up? And there you are. Okay, I didn't see you. You had me confused for a second. Patty Scott.
I could have worn my FFA jacket, and it still fits.
Well,
I know.
And she didn't raise goats. She raised sheep, we find out. So, okay, go ahead.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Senate Bill 203 defines service areas for Columbia Gorge Community College District and Southwestern Oregon Community College District. Defines these districts as the area served prior to the annexation of new territory.
And with that, I will just let them, because Patty Scott.
So, Senator Roblin and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to testify today on Senate Bill 203. This legislation is critical to Southwestern Oregon Community College and our ability to bring a bond measure to the voters to build new facilities. Rural Oregon Community College has faced structural barriers in the laws and systems in which we operate in Oregon, and these barriers are hard for us, if not impossible, to raise money to meet state matches, to build facilities and attract investment. So Senate Bill 203 would eliminate one of those barriers for Southwestern. In the fall of 2016, my board wanted to place a bond measure on the ballot for capital construction to help us raise the match money for our capital construction project to build the Health and Science and Technology Building. A glitch in the state law prevented us from going to the voters directly impacted by the project. So Southwestern operates two campuses, one in Coos Bay in Coos County and one 120 miles away in Brookings in Curry County. So this bill is a legislative fix to create two distinct service districts to the areas to address this issue. Southwestern was the first service district formed in 1961, and in 1995 we annexed and expanded the district to serve Curry County, and that's what caused this problem. Senate Bill 203 amends ORS 3.4.601 to allow Southwestern to specifically recognize the original service district of Coos and Western Douglas counties which were provided services prior to the annexation of Curry County, and it allows Southwestern to limit bond measures to one or the other service district so that the voters aren't forced to tax and indebt themselves for construction of facilities on campuses that don't serve them. As the law stands now, Southwestern must take a bond measure request to the entire district rather than to the voters in the area where the project is. So you can imagine the voters in Brookings or Gold Beach who use the campus in Brookings aren't interested in paying for construction for a building that's going to be built in Coos Bay on the Coos campus, which is 2 hours away. So Senate Bill 203 would fix this problem. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Frank.
Chair Roblin, for the record, my name is Frank Toda. I am the president of Columbia Gorge Community College. We serve approximately 10,000 square miles, seven counties. We have been in existence for 40 years. This is our 40th year, so we're very, very excited about that. As a result of state capital funding, we've been able to keep up with the growth in the rural area. And by the way, I support the FAA gang behind me. Love them all. But having said that, while we've been blessed with capital construction and we've been able to support our two campuses, it has not been without challenge. And a challenge happens with the way the wording is written with regard to the bonding. And years ago, we came up with the idea that it would be really great if we could separate the two county taxing districts in terms of their ability to vote separately or together, depending on what the issue was. Right now, it's all or none, which as you know, makes it difficult when you have two counties that are as different as Wasco County and Hood River County. So again, I ask for your support of the. I've been telling my staff it's an administrative enhancement of a bill that's been out there, a law that's been out there for some time, and by this enhancement, we will be able to be more competitive in terms of keeping up with enrollment growth and supporting the different needs of rural colleges. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions for this group? Yes.
Just a comment, and specifically to Southwestern. I mean, when you expanded to give service to Curry County, it was an incredibly wonderful thing. It took us a while to get there, but we did get there. This, Ms. Chair, is dealing with an unintended consequence of them wanting to serve students who couldn't have been served in any other way but to build the second campus. So,
yeah, and I agree. I think this is one of those things that there are unintended consequences for our laws, and when groups and community colleges in particular decide that and they look around that they want to fulfill that mission to a larger place, they inadvertently make it much harder for them to get something done. And the voters in a particular area are the ones that really care about a particular thing, and so we want to let them be the people who pay for it and vote for it. And
exactly.
I'm pleased Precisely. That the bill came up. And you said your school's been there for 40 years. Do you know what was the first community college in Oregon?
The first one formed after the vote by the vote of the people was Southwestern Oregon
Community
College.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to check.
1961.
I thought that was a trick question.
And another problem with this bill is our original service district included Western Lane County, which we never served, but we can't go to them because they're part of another district.
Right.
So that fixes that as well.
Yeah.
Okay. So thank you so much.
Yeah. Any other questions? Thank you, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Nobody else on the list, unless an FFA person needs to get some extra points for testifying in the legislature.
Speaking.
So with that, we will close our public hearing on Senate Bill 203.
Mr. Chair, I'm assuming the bill needs no more work, and we can just reschedule.
We feel really good
for a public hearing or for a work
yeah,
session.
We will set it up for a public hearing as soon as
work
we can.
Session.
Work session. I'm sorry. Yep. So we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 205. And we'll have a short explanation. And as that's happening, Monica Bean, our director, can come on up.
And Jared.
And
Jared,
you want to come up too? I don't see Jared here, so go ahead and he'll be coming in soon.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Senate Bill 205 allows a teacher licensure applicant to teach for 90 calendar days after submitting an application as long as the person is not ineligible based on a criminal records check and has complied with all other requirements established by the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission's administrative rules. It declares an emergency effective on passage.
And with that, we'll have Monica Bean.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Monica Bean. I'm the executive director of the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission and a proud National Board certified teacher and the parent of a former completer of the agriculture education program in West Virginia and a member of FFA as well as FBLA.
Okay.
With that being said, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you regarding Senate Bill 205 today. This, as you know, is not a bill that was brought forth from the TSPC. Rather, it was as a result of my testimony during the September hearing. And so it is a committee bill. So first and foremost, I'm not speaking in favor or against the bill. I'm providing factual information for you. One of the things that the bill would do is it would allow a teacher to enter into a classroom after and only after the TSPC staff has verified that the teacher or principal educator is in fact safe to students. That is the utmost priority of the agency. So that would result in the completion of a background investigation, including the fingerprint testing, as well as the Google search and the NASDAQ clearance. That would result in a notification to the district that that teacher, that individual, that applicant is in fact safe. And then that person would be able to go into the classroom. The current way that we do things is that the person applies for a license and then they're in this queue. And as you know, we have a little bit of a history of a backlog issue in the agency over the past few years. And so while we were waiting for the person to be licensed, there was a substitute that was placed into the classroom, typically at the beginning of the school year or as soon as there was a vacancy. This bill would allow for the person to go into the classroom and not put a substitute teacher in there until the person is licensed. I can tell you that we are addressing the backlog issue, and I'm very, very pleased to say that my team has reduced the backlog and they're processing and issuing licenses within the 90-day period. They're actually at about 4.5 weeks right now. We received 3,000 plus applications just this past month of February. So they are still issuing within the 4.5 week period. So 90% of the applications that we receive from the date they clear the background check to the time they are issued a license, over 90% of those applications are completed within 90 days. And that's just the June 1st through December 31st data. And that was without implementing some of the changes to expedite the process. We had a request just in last year alone for approximately 800 expedited application requests. That means that the district wanted someone in the classroom. We have that option currently where the district can say, we want this person in the classroom, and there's a fee for that, because what happens is it creates that jam. Once an expedited application fee is paid and the application request is made, then everybody else in the queue then gets bypassed. And so my team then makes that application a priority because it has been expedited. We all know that that's not really the best practice, in that it just slows down the processing of the other licenses, and it really is not in the best interest of students. That being said, I am here to answer any questions that you might have regarding the bill, and I await those.
Yeah, let's have questions and we'll go to Jed. Yes, Senator Hass.
Thank you. I might have missed this, but what if someone doesn't qualify who falls within that window and it's not a criminal issue, which they didn't get the courses or whatever, but they've already been certified and maybe they're sitting teaching first graders in a classroom?
Senator Roblin, members of the committee, and Senator Hess, thank you for the question. That's a great question. So they really would not be certified at that point. What they would be is permitted to go into the classroom. Many states, in fact, most all states have this system already in place. And what happens is at the end of those 90 days, if for some reason they would not qualify, which I would hope that the districts wouldn't want them in the classroom if they knew they weren't going to qualify, and they should be checking that before they hire them. Typically, it's they've already been licensed in another state, and they've completed a program. It literally is just a catalog. But if for some instance they were not going to meet the criteria for the initial license or whatever license they're making application for, then our staff would work with the district to see what eligible license they could receive. And it could possibly just be a substitute teaching license for the remainder of the school year. So they could, in fact, stay in that classroom, but as a substitute teacher and not necessarily as a full licensed educator with that capacity.
All right. So follow up?
Yeah, follow up.
I guess I'd be interested in how big of a problem is this? Is this just overloading the system? Is this just something we should take care of, or is it best practices? I mean, to what extent is there a problem here that we need to fix right away?
Chair Roblin, Senator Haas, thank you for the question. There is always an issue with getting a teacher in the classroom, and if there's one teacher that cannot get into a classroom, as an educator and as a principal and as a parent, if you're not putting a licensed educator or an effective educator in that classroom on day one, then you're jeopardizing the educational experience for all of the students that are in that classroom. So in my opinion, one would be sufficient for allowing this option. But there were approximately 800 just in the last year that were impacted. That's 800 teachers. 800 teachers times X number of students that were impacted just in the last year. And that's a lower number than it has been in years past. It has been a very high number as a trend. And so this would help to alleviate some of that that rush that once September hits, getting someone in the classroom.
Yeah. Just follow up, Mr. Chair. My only concern is that in past years on this committee, we've worked with trying to minimize bad teachers and this notion that teachers hate the phrase of passing the trash, and administrators as well. And sometimes if you're not careful, you do get someone who might not have a criminal background, but is someone who needs a second look. And I just, in the haste of doing this, I'd hate to see those people go through, and I know that other teachers who have had to go through this might not see it as a fair system when somebody else just gets sort of rubber stamped through. So, and this is a huge issue with me, but I just that was reason for those questions.
So I just want to take a moment to say something. So as a high school principal, as you're getting ready for the school year, a number of things happen. A person has been given the option of two jobs, and they decide to take the one that's not your school. And you've gone through the interview process. You have two or three people who are qualified, who are in the list. The one leaves, and so then you get on the phone really quickly. You can do two things. You can have that person's license heard, because there's a section in the statute that says if they don't give you enough notice, you can do it. Most of us don't do that, because oftentimes the reason is that family member had a problem, some other kind of thing happened, something tragic happened in their family, so it just happens. So then you go back and you go down the list and you hire the next person. Now, all of these people have been vetted. The school district has already decided this is somebody who they would like in their classroom. Maybe this is the second choice, but it's somebody. And if they're from out of state and they haven't got their certificate, they're at the back of one of these lines. We more than a few times I've had two or three substitute teachers working the first 2 months. These teachers feel horrible about it. They had a license. They turned out to be good teachers later, but we didn't get to have them in the classroom. And so then a month later, they get through the process. We've paid more money. They've paid more money, however, whatever you're going to do. And at the end of the day, they get in the classroom and it works. But having had them from the first day would have made a lot of difference for kids. That's just my personal experience in this thing. It doesn't happen all that often, but when it happens, it's really a problem. And I'm really excited about the fact that the backlog is not there, because my wife has paid expedited certificates at different times because we sent it in, but it wasn't there. And the district is looking at your date on your certificate, and they're saying, you're not going to get paid after this date. So it is an important thing to take care of. And I don't think it's about bad teachers or the other part of the trash issue that we've talked about before. I think it's more about making a system that really lets the people who should be in the classroom from the beginning be in the classroom. Senator?
So I would feel better about that, Mr. Chair, looking at the language, because I understand that the language itself is about the requirements for a teaching license, but it doesn't talk about the requirements for hiring. So I think this could circumvent the requirements of House Bill 2062 from 2009, which is that before you can make the offer to hire and bring them into the district, you have to check, the district has to check with the prior three educational employers to ensure that there has not been a dismissal or an ongoing investigation related to sexual contact. So I would feel better about the language if it referenced that in order to teach for 90 days, you had to comply with all of the requirements of that section as well.
Yeah, and we can talk about that. I think that's a good idea.
I don't know if that gets at what Senator Haas was. I would assume that has to happen. I don't think it says that because it's notwithstanding any requirement. A person whose application for a teaching license is pending may teach in the public schools of the state for 90 calendar days.
If I may, subsection A right below that references the criminal records provided
by ORAS.
Correct.
It's different than a criminal record, and it would apply to these individuals because it also applies to people that are coming from out of state because you have to check with that employer even if it is in a prior state before that. So it would not necessarily pop up, and that could create a loophole for people to kind of sneak in, get access to kids that shouldn't.
I would say that from my perspective as a principal and the way it works, I've already done that before I would have even considered offering him a job. So that part would have been done. I understand your idea about maybe referencing it here so that has to be done as well. And that's certainly an easy amendment.
Because without that language, another principal that isn't the esteemed Arnie Roblin may make a different decision.
Well, I had a lot of people who left. They weren't necessarily fired, but they chose to leave, who I was waiting for the phone call that never came. So I understand that carefully. Yes?
Just that subsection A has an and clause and a background check through an interstate clearinghouse referring to those out-of-state teachers, et cetera. So if there's one more little comma you need to throw in with an added requirement.
Part of what we were getting at with the other bill, though, is that there are teachers who make an agreement with the school district that I won't push it anymore, I'm just going to leave. They didn't get fired, they didn't have other kind of stuff, it wouldn't show up in a background check, they were never convicted of a criminal. What we've been asked to do now in our state as a principal is to call the previous employers to say, do you have any concerns about this person? Which is separate from a background check and everything else. So it goes a little farther.
What it was getting at, and we worked really hard on this for a couple of sessions, we've come back and we've revisited it because there has to be due process inside of it as well. But it's that behavior that is right up to the line of what would be a criminal action, and that's why we call it in the law, it's not sexual contact. So in judiciary, you know, sexual contact is that actual touching. This is sexual conduct. So it could be the teacher that is hugging the students in ways that make them feel uncomfortable, or rubbing their hand down their back, or sending them text messages, or you know, we had one in our district giving a gift of pornographic dice. That's not a crime, but that person probably should not be teaching, and this is the only way to catch that.
Pornographic dice?
Yes. Anyway, so that
Sheltered
gives you
life,
a number of idea, and we'll look at that and see what kind of amendments can be made. Any other comments? Okay, so now we'll move on to Jared. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Jared Mason Gear with the Oregon Education Association, representing 44,000 educators around the state. So I guess first, we appreciate the spirit in which this legislation is brought forward. Certainly, we've talked before and we'll talk again about some of the shortfalls that we're experiencing with educators around the state and have a lot of difficulty with particular specialties, and then increasingly seeing a shortage of substitutes available to come in and offer respite to full-time educators for whatever reason. So the effort to address this, we very much appreciate. And then I think also just want to commend the TSBC for the work that they're doing to speed up their processes. And I think the long-term hope on all of our part is that this won't be an issue that we're struggling with quite so mightily. So all those things said, we do have some concerns. I apologize, Mr. Chair, that I wasn't able to raise them with you yet. It's taken me several days to get my head right after the La La Land fiasco at the Oscars. we're able to connect with Ms. Bean and the TSBC and talk through some of the issues we had earlier today, and I think we're on a track to be able to resolve some of these issues. Many of them are along the lines that Senator Gelser raised. We do think that in subsection A, that if that we could make that language stronger and a bit more affirmative, requiring some proof that some of these things have done, not just not allowing the absence that they haven't occurred. So there's a few changes in language that we think would make, you know, that would make us much more comfortable, and we think make the bill stronger, and would love to work with you on that and TSBC on that and come back after we've addressed some of those changes.
Okay. Any questions for Jared?
No, just one comment, Ms. Chair. With all of the talk of emergency clauses, this is a bill that does need one, so that so that we can get people online for the next school year. So,
I guess what I would tell the group right now, I would encourage if Dr. Bean and Jared, and maybe even work with our administrator to get an amendment that would kind of meet that, and we'll check with Sarah as well just to make sure before we get there. Okay. I appreciate
Thank
that.
You.
Is there anyone else that wants to come up and have an opportunity to speak to Senate Bill 205 and have yourself grilled by Senator Gelser?
I'm nice.
I didn't say it was grilling isn't necessarily bad. So with that, we're going to close our public hearing on Senate Bill 205, and we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 230. We'll have a short explanation by our committee. I always say administrator. I'm going to say that anyway. Committee administrator, even though she's not.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Senate Bill 230 requires the Oregon Department of Education to register students enrolled in agricultural education with the National Future Farmers of America organization. It requires ODE to provide financial support for leadership development and training, and it establishes program requirements. It appropriates $1.8 million from the general fund to ODE for the Oregon FFA Association to pay for student registration. The bill requires ODE to establish an incentive grant program to support public school agriculture and science programs, and a grant program for funding extended duty contracts for school district personnel to manage agricultural programs during the summer. It establishes requirements for both grant programs. It directs that funding for the grant programs be drawn from the High School Graduation and College and Career Readiness Fund established by Ballot Measure 98 of 2016. The bill declares an emergency effective on passage.
Okay. With that, we'll have Haley Patterson, Mary Mitchell Dyer, and Caitlin Snyder. Hope I got those right. At least close. Oh, and Representative, and come on up, Representative Smith. Sorry about that.
Is it?
Or that, or you, we can bring a fourth chair up. Is there another?
No, let's. He suggested.
That's right.
Do this panel.
Well, let's go first. You guys are. See, your representative standing there, allowing you to go first. This is nice. Thank you.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee. My name is Mary Mitchell Dyer, and I'm from Milwaukee, Oregon. It is my love of animals that drove me to decide in first grade that I wanted to be a veterinarian. I was very fortunate that when I started high school, I was able to participate in an agriculture class that offered hands-on experiences on a school farm, as well as 18 college credits at Lynn Benton Community College. FFA is about experiences and developing youth as individuals, regardless of their background. In my 4 years, I have experienced starting my own business with a flock of laying hens in the middle of the city, keeping records and applying business skills. I've also practiced career skills used in the poultry industry through a national level competition. FFA has allowed me to compete in parliamentary procedure, which led me to become a certified parliamentarian. I've visited our nation's capital, learning how to give back to our communities, and I have applied veterinary skills both on our school farm and in competitions, which has solidified my chosen career path. Because of FFA, I'm able to stand in front of you today and communicate my passions in life. FFA has changed my views on agriculture, animals, and on who I want to be in life. Because of FFA, I have obtained 18 college credits at Lynn Benton, where I will be dual enrolled in the fall. My personal experiences with FFA have shown me that I still want to be a veterinarian, but now I want to focus on large animals, assisting in food animal production. Growing up in an urban community, I consider myself very lucky to have found FFA. I believe that my future has completely changed because I decided to take one class my freshman year of high school.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For the record, my name is Caitlin Schneider. I'm a senior at Henley High School. Many people associate FFA with being a family tradition. However, this is not the case in all circumstances. Personally, I don't have much of an agricultural background, and I'm the first in my family to join FFA, followed by my younger brother. FFA sparked my interest for sheep production and competitive showing, and I currently have a supervised agricultural experience, or an SAE project, of 18 ewes, a ram, and 25 rambunctious lambs. With this, it comes with long nights, heartache from loss, and pride. And each student has an SAE project, and each one is different and provides different outcomes for the student. SAEs are chosen by the student, and they help that student find an area of interest for their future endeavors. Not only that, but it provides opportunity, and FFA has given me the opportunity to grow as a speaker and as a leader. So basically, what I'm trying to point out is that this organization is growing. In the last 4 years, it has grown from 579,678 members nationally to 649,355. It is creating better leaders and more prepared job seekers. And I often hear my fellow classmates complain about not knowing how to properly fill out a resume or how to be prepared for a job interview. And I smile and I say you should take an IDE class. So far, I've competed in job interview, public speaking, agricultural sales and marketing, as well as parliamentary procedure as a chairman. I've had more experiences than 98% of my fellow classmates, and I've traveled and seen great national monuments, and I've found a home away from bad influences that come with high school, all because of FFA. And each person in this room wearing the blue jacket shares something in common. They each have the opportunity to grow as an individual and as a future contributor to society. It is so important for students to learn these real-life skills to benefit their future. FFA provides hands-on learning and helps students overcome public speaking fears, as well as learn to think quickly and process a solution through competitions such as job interview, agricultural sales, agricultural marketing, veterinary science, and many more. And they learn to study better for tests and competitions than any other students because they have to study for their competitions as well as their schoolwork. And they learn how to properly run and execute a meeting. And no mandatory class that I've taken in my 4 years of high school has better prepared me and better provided me the information, the skills, the experiences, or the drive that my IDE classes have. In the looks of our future, it would be wise to see more people in agricultural classes and in FFA. And with your help, we can keep our growing organization. Thank you.
Hi, my name's Haley Patterson for the record. I'm from a really small town, 300 people to be exact, an even smaller school. So like most small schools, my school was really driven towards being successful in sports. Like you did sports, that's something you did, because if you didn't, we didn't have enough of the sports team, so you had to do it. For me, though, I was not athletically talented. My little brother took all the genetics for that one. So instead, I was driven on doing well in academics, doing well in extracurricular activities and other things outside of school. So these things aren't very popular amongst high school students. That was until I discovered FFA. So once I joined FFA, I was immediately surrounded with all these other high schoolers who had the same drive, the same passions that I did. They were all wanting to be successful, just like me. So really what I'm trying to say is, in FFA, it's okay to be awesome. In fact, it's encouraged. But I'm not just talking about in academics or in competitions. I'm talking about in personal growth. Right, I'm talking about career success and your leadership as well. Also, in high school, besides noticing this drive for sports, I also noticed something else. All these problem students, they were constantly being shoved out to the ag room. I'd had some math classes with these guys, some science classes as well, They didn't pay attention half the time when they were asleep, to be honest. They weren't motivated at all. And then once they went out to the ag room, my FFA advisor, he loaded them up on the minibus, drove them to the ag mechanics competition, made them compete, took them to this career show that our local ODOT puts on that talks about the different careers that they have at ODOT. And all of a sudden, these kids were hooked. They found a passion. They were excited that they were learning real-life skills that would be applicable past the next test and past high school. FFA has provided me with many opportunities. It's provided everybody that's wearing these blue jackets with opportunities. I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for FFA. And I know for a fact that some of those problem students, they would have dropped out of high school if it weren't for FFA. So if there's two things that I can leave you with, it's that FFA provides opportunities and it provides students with a future. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this group?
She didn't tell us what school she went
to. Oh, yeah, you said we had a small school, but if you don't want to tell it, you don't have to say.
It's on the back of the code, so.
Yeah, right. Imbler.
Imbler, okay. Okay.
Any other questions for this group? Okay, thank you very much.
Three pretty awesome young ladies, yes. Mr. Chair.
Thank you. You can go take a seat outside. Thank you. And now one of the bravest people I've ever known is going to come up. Greg Smith, who is a gentleman by letting him go first, and then to follow that group, it takes bravery and a very classy person.
I'm crazy to follow that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Oregon State Representative Greg Smith, and I have the distinct pleasure of representing Umatilla County and Morrow County, Gillam County, Sherman County, and the very, very best parts of Wasco County, which includes the great community of Duffer. And today I'm here to lend support for the bill that you're a chief sponsor of, Mr. Chair. And I want to congratulate you, and I want you to know folks throughout all of rural Oregon and urban Oregon support you in this effort. Colleagues, I want to share just a brief story with you. It was about 5 years ago on a Thursday afternoon. My wife called me and said, you got to hurry up. We got to get down to the elementary school. Your daughter, Genevieve, is going to be getting a special little award. And it was the end of the quarter, and that's when they hand out, you know, the award certificates. And as I was heading down there and I was finding a place to park, I noticed another dad going in opposite direction. He was heading into the principal's office to go visit on one of the other youth in that school. And that's when it clicked with me. We're going to spend time and money on our children. The question is, how? Are we going to invest in FFA? Are we going to invest in art and science and technology and music and the sciences? Or are we going to spend money in Department of Corrections, the Oregon Youth Authority, and all those other programs? Colleagues, I would share with you, as a member of the Ways and Means Subcommittee, our Ways and Means Committee, who's been working there for 9 sessions, we're going to invest in these kids. The question is how? And I would strongly, strongly encourage us to invest on the front end, to invest in these youth and help them become engaged in good, productive activities. As I was getting ready to prepare for my comments today, I was visiting with all the FFA kids who were in the overflow out in the hall. And I said, what do you want me to share to the committee? And they said, let the committee know that this is a good program where you can meet good kids, where you can spend time doing productive activities, where you can learn to communicate, you can learn to be a leader, you can learn to balance a checkbook, and oh yes, you can also learn how to raise a lamb or a pig. Colleagues, we're going to spend money on our kids. The question is, how are we going to do it? As Vice Co-Chair of Ways and Means, as the Republican Budget Chair in the House, I want you to know I'm committed to working with you to find the resources to make this work, not only for this program, but for all the other programs that invest in our youth. FFA is a program worth investing in, and I compliment you for taking the time to listen to our youth and to considering this bill. Mr. Chair, thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Any questions?
Yeah, I've seen him twice today.
Again, thank you very much for taking time out of your day to come here as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So next we have
John Chandler.
Casey Rhodes.
And one more.
Kirk,
I think it's supposed to be. Mr. Chandler, I've seen John Chandler twice today, too.
I know.
This is.
Yeah.
Well, I'll be happy to start. Thank you very much, Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Casey Rhodes, and I will be leading off this panel of former state officers, past state officers, or has-beens from a previous century now. I grew up in Bend. My family and I own a small water utility company, which is obviously very natural resource-based, and we spend a lot of time following the policies around that industry. But I'm also serving as the mayor of Bend, and I want to make sure and be clear, I am not representing the council or the city of Bend, but only referencing the fact that in that role I am serving in, I can point to no greater force and no greater experience than my time in the FFA that led me to be in that role at what some describe as a fairly young age, and hopefully the vigor makes up for the lack of experience. One of the things that I think was the most impressive about my experiences in the FFA was especially the year I spent as a state FFA officer. I traveled all around the state, stayed in multiple homes. We'd stay in 5 or 6 different homes a week, a night, as we made our way around the state, seeing these kids and these projects. And I can tell you, the FFA is doing impressive things. And it did impressive things when I was there and when these gentlemen were there as well. And they continue to do so. And I monitor and check in on state conventions. And I'll be giving the welcoming address at the state convention in Redmond in 3 weeks. And I expect to be upstaged by kids half my age because they will be better polished, better speakers, probably better at advocating their ideas because the organization they're a part of absolutely tailors itself around those things. Career development events, preparing themselves for a career, and most importantly, being a leader in their community. And I would tell you that one of those career development events was the parliamentary procedure, and I was a part of that as in the FFA. No small part of my colleagues choosing me to serve as mayor in Bend was the fact I had working experience with parliamentary procedure. So in a town of 80-some-odd thousand people, where we sometimes have trouble getting all of our council races to be competitive, in a city that's supposed to have lots of problems, and we do, and lots of issues, and a very engaged citizenry, we need leadership, and we need people who are willing to step up and lead. And practical experience cannot be beat. And that is exactly what this organization does, is it prepares these young people to be those leaders. I don't think there's a better return on our potential precious public resources than what you see in this room behind us here today. And I'll yield the balance of time to my friends.
Sorry, he used up all your time. Oh, not
Chairman, senators, good afternoon and thank you. I'm Kirk Mogg. I live in Portland, but home is my family farm 15 miles north of Vail, Oregon, Mogg Farms Incorporated, where I learned how to work alongside my parents and grandparents. I had my first experience with the FFA as a freshman at Vail High School. I was a chapter officer, district officer, and served as the state FFA reporter from 2000 to 2001. I'm a recipient of the American FFA degree, the highest degree that the organization bestows on its members. Following my active involvement as a member in the organization, I had the opportunity to travel and work for FFA, presenting leadership conferences throughout the United States, 3 summers in Washington, D.C., and spent 1 summer traveling around the United States, training state officers from various states. Today, I'm a partner at Stoll Reeves, Oregon's largest law firm, and I will say, and Casey and I didn't compare notes, but what I will say is almost identical to him in that there has been no experience in my life that has had a greater impact on my personal and professional success and development than the National FFA organization, hands down. One of the things that I want to touch on today is that FFA instills in its members a passion for civic engagement and civic service, and at a time where I think that our society could use more of that, FFA is really a shining example of an organization that instills that ethic in its members. I currently serve on the board of directors for the Oregon FFA Foundation, for the Cultivating Change Foundation, which has a mission to value and elevate LGBT individuals involved in agriculture, and as an advisor to my college fraternity. My commitment to civic engagement was really shaped through my involvement in the FFA. And if you look at any community in which there's an FFA chapter, you will find FFA members doing good things to make their communities better, to do it selflessly and for the benefit of others, and they will continue to do that for the rest of their lives. I appreciate the opportunity to address you today and urge you to make this sound investment in Oregon.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, John Chandler. Normally, I appear before you with my home builder's hat on, and while they would, I think, associate themselves with my remarks, I'm here today as an individual, but also as a member of the State Fair Council, which is a big fan of the Oregon FFA. You're going to hear something very similar in my personal story, which I'll be brief. I grew up in a little town called Culver, south of Madras. At the time I was there, there were 350-some-odd people. My graduating class had 22. I had the privilege of serving as the state president of Oregon Future Farmers of America in 1974 and 1975. And like my colleagues here, there was nothing I could have done in my life that would prepare me better for the rest of my life than my experience with FFA, and particularly in a small school. And for Culver, please substitute Glide or Riddle or Hettner or Ione or any of the small towns in your district, because almost every one of them is going to have an FFA program and an ag program and a vocational education program, which is going to prepare kids just like me or my colleagues here for a lifetime of service, public engagement, involvement. Two of us at this panel went to law school, which is regrettable, I understand, but that shouldn't be held against the program generally. But I, in a small school like Culver, and a small school like any of the rest of them that are represented here, your academic opportunities are limited because of the size of the school, the size of the budget. Your professional development, your career development, your aspirational development are not limited if you're involved in an organization like FFA. And that's the value of what these programs bring. The blue jackets in the room are testament to that. The other thing I want to point out, just for your to be thinking about, we have spent over the last several legislative sessions many millions of dollars revitalizing, pumping air back into, and growing our career technical education programs. Those programs, wood shop, metal shop, auto shop, phlebotomy, whatever it might be, all the vocational education that we let dwindle in this state for so many years, groups like FFA are the Letterman's Clubs. Those are the organizations that will attract kids into the vocational education, attract them into CTE classes, make it worthwhile, give them the leadership skills and other training that goes along with that, that I believe adds value, multiplies the value that you're spending. And we're going to be back in front of you this session, not just on this bill, but on others, trying to add more money to those CTE, make sure the investments we've made don't go away. This program is worth your support. You, I think, know that. I know it's a tough budget time, but as I told a Ways and Means Subcommittee the other day, that doesn't mean that important stuff ought not be funded. It just means it has to be done thoughtfully and obviously in context with everything else. But I cannot think of a better expenditure of state money than revitalizing, keeping these programs healthy and active, and allowing people like the youngsters that come up behind us the same opportunities that we had to grow our personal, make the personal growth and leadership skills that then translate into a lifetime of professional success. Be glad to take any questions. Thank you for your consideration.
Any questions for this group? Again, I want to thank at least the two distinguished guests that came a little farther. The other person's here all the time, but but having been served with him on the fair board, it's been good to hear that life history. We've talked about it a few times about how important it is to do things that matter for your heart as opposed to just your intellect, and that there's reasons to get engaged, like on things like the fair board, that people would not have necessarily thought he would spend his time on. So I appreciate that dedication to our state as well. So thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have safe trips home.
Thank you.
Especially to Ben. With that, Bryson Price, Wes Crawford, and Roslyn Patrick. And again, thanks for being here. And whoever wants to start.
That will be me.
Okay.
For the record, I am Bryson Price from Sutherland. And I've been an FFA member for 5 years. And I'm currently serving as an Oregon FFA state officer. And in FFA and agricultural education, we have a system that works. And we refer to that as the three-circle model. And in short, those three circles are classroom experiences, FFA membership, and a project we do outside of class that we refer to as a supervised agricultural experience. These three circles are laid out like a Venn diagram. And it's the part where those three circles overlap that holds true educational power. And I've experienced that power, and I've come here to share that story today. In my agricultural education classes, actually taught by Mr. Wes Crawford, I had the opportunity to learn about marketing and customer service. and this is the first circle. Then in my FFA membership, through various FFA events, I had the opportunity to apply what I learned in the classroom as well as learn about sales and public speaking. And this is the second circle. And then in that supervised agricultural experience, or SAE for short, I had the opportunity to not only apply what I learned in the classroom and from my FFA involvement, but I also chose to start and operate a landscape management business. And in this, I applied that previous knowledge, as well as I learned a lot about sound financial and business practices while caring for customers and employees and equipment. And when we put all of that together, there's that true educational power. And as a state officer, I've had the opportunity to travel the state visiting over 100 classrooms and meeting over 10,000 agricultural education students. And I've realized that this three-circle model works all the time. It's not just a thing with Bryce and Price. It works in the lives of these 10,000 students, because you see, they're not just memorizing something for a test and then they take the test and forget. They're actually learning, and because they're learning, they're gaining these skills that we've heard about today that give us the opportunity to fulfill our dreams. In my case, I feel that I'm better prepared and more able to fulfill my dream of becoming a lawyer and owning a small business. And so for that, I'd just like to thank agricultural education, the FFA, and ag teachers everywhere. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. For the record, my name's Rosalind Patrick, a former Sutherland FFA member. So not too long ago, I sat where...
You can sit up. Yeah, perfect.
Just
the, mic will catch it. It doesn't have to be close to it.
Okay, thank you. Not too long ago, I sat where these students sit today in their blue jackets and was an FFA member. And the FFA program was huge in my personal development and in my college readiness. And so I'm from Sutherland, which is a small rural community. And so as many people who've already testified have spoke to, your opportunities can be limited, but not when you're surrounded by excellent programs like the FFA and our ag programs. And so those programs are what really gave me the opportunity to develop public speaking skills, job interview skills, to be able to develop a network, which has served me well. And so by doing that, I built confidence, and confidence meaning as a first-generation college student, that was an option. And that was because of FFA and wonderful ag teachers such as Wes himself. And so I would just, you know, really speak to the power of this organization and what it does for students in rural communities and urban ones. And so it really serves as a tool to unite both urban and rural students together. It gives them a way to engage in agriculture and to learn skills that are transferable both to college and to life after college, and which makes them citizens who can be contributing to their communities. And so when I finished up my time at Sutherland High School as an FFA member and as a student, I proceeded to go to Oregon State University. And by doing so, I had entered into Oregon State University with college credits, which ultimately allows you to start a little ahead of the game, and which can be difficult to do today, finish within 4 years. And so at Oregon State, because of my experience in FFA, I already had a network of students that were at Oregon State but from other communities throughout the state. And by doing that, it also gave me the opportunity to get involved in clubs, and I had built the confidence to know that you can step outside your comfort zone and try things that maybe you're not familiar with. So not growing up on a family farm or immersed in ag, my only connection being a small rural community, I had the opportunity to actually engage in the College of Ag Sciences and find a major that really fit my career goals. So life after Oregon State really allowed me to ultimately become a citizen who's now contributing to the community. I sit alongside in the organization in which I work amongst people who were in FFA in 1982. They are serving as leaders within the organization, and they encourage their support in the FFA organization as well. And so I can't speak enough to the amount of pride people who serve in this organization have for it, and the skills and development opportunities that it provides to the students, and ultimately is important and really key in keeping our communities energized and full of people who are willing to give back and to really be people who are going to make a difference. And so thank you.
So I want to make sure, did you say your name at the beginning?
Yes.
Okay, that's good, because I missed that part and I don't know why. Thank you.
Yep, no problem.
Good afternoon, Chairman Roblin, Senators, and thanks very much for your time today. I'm Wes Crawford from Sutherland, Oregon. I represent the Oregon Agriculture Teachers Association, as well as I'm an FFA advisor and an ag teacher there at Sutherland High School. And I have First, thank you for this time to communicate the power and the value that you've also expressed in terms of Ag Education FFA. And I've put myself in a real quandary here because, one, I'm very proud to sit here at this table with two students, the first one I met 10 years ago when she came in as a freshman. Very eager, very excited for leadership. The only reason she was in my ag classroom was for the leadership potential in FFA, and we've converted her. First, I converted her from University of Oregon to Oregon State, so good job, me. Secondly, into entering in a career in agriculture industry and where she's going to continue to be a leader and engaged in that. My other quandary, though, is I have to follow these two. And you're going to wonder why a person who taught them how to speak can't speak better than they can. But we're going to give it a best shot anyway. And I'm just very proud of everyone who spoke today. And so really, all the good things, I would just be reiterating. So there's three things I really want to share with you as we close this out with the session so you can move on to many other things I know that you have. And first is know that you have the example today, not the exception. And what I mean by that is, yes, you've seen exceptional students and you've seen exceptional alumni. And they're but an example of we have hundreds and hundreds more that are also exceptional. And so we haven't just given you the just the only good ones. We've given you an example of the good ones. And know that there's great things happening in our smallest schools and our largest schools in this state, for sure. And they have this equity in that they all have this equal opportunity through Ag Education FFA to fulfill their potential. We're very proud of that. The second is it's the tip of the iceberg that we have here today as well in terms of the Blue Jackets behind me and the thousands of people they represent across the state, as well as everything that Bryson spoke to about that three-circle model of Ag Education and everything that's happening in those classrooms, that this holistic approach that isn't necessarily available for every student. And the third thing I would end with is the urgency. We have a great program. We have great things happening. And so the question might be, why are we here? We know it's great. Because there's an urgency about sustainability. I hope that in 30 years, when the people behind me are taking your seats, that there is an opportunity for a hearing like this, and that we have the continuation of Ag Education FFA. Because I'll tell you that where we're at right now, we've hit a ceiling, and we're at a point where we're not necessarily sustainable because of the challenges that our state has experienced in funding over the last several years. And I know that, and that was what this bill seeks to do, is to provide that sustainability so we can continue on the great things that we're doing, but also so we can expand it. We can do this for more students in more schools, because unfortunately not every rural school has an ag education program. And there's many of our largest schools who do, and there's many more who will benefit from it. From right there in the Portland metropolitan area with the from Mary from North Clackamas, like you heard from earlier, as well as programs of study in ag education that are currently being explored in Beaverton High School and in the Medford area and all across our state. And so know that this is not just a matter of we're here to celebrate a thing that's good because we are, and we really appreciate you listening to that. But know that there's an urgency behind this in terms of making sure that we are sustainable, that we're able to serve more students and grow this, because at the point we are right now, we cannot. And so your support and your enthusiasm you've shown today for these students, we hope will continue with this Senate bill so that we can continue to do this for many, many years to come. So one of these students can be the John Chandler in the room in a few decades, and that we can ensure that even more students are benefiting from this holistic approach to developing these citizen leaders. Thank you very much. I'll entertain any questions that and welcome them that the committee has.
Mm-hmm. Any questions for the group? The only question I have is, have you kept statistics as a group on graduation rates for kids that are engaged in FFA and some of these other things, because it can be really helpful in the particular place we're trying to get the money.
Absolutely. The Department of Education has very solid statistics in terms of there's a 15 to 16% higher graduation rate of career and technical education students than the general graduation rate we're currently suffering under in Oregon. That's documented. In terms of specific ones for Ag Education FFA, it gets a little harder to access that data. And so it's definitely something I would I can work to do for you. I could give you some specific school examples ones, and I think that you would not be surprised by the result.
Any other questions for this panel? Okay. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you for your time.
So all of the people who signed up have now spoken. we have a little bit more time. Is there anybody else out there who has been sitting there and they realize that those nine people that came before them left out something and they need to express what it was that is missing? So if there's anybody, you can step forward. I don't see anybody. Did you want to speak?
A little bit. You know, John Chandler's not a good example, but that was a joke, okay? That was a joke. I was thinking back of my time, Mr. Chair, and my friends who I served with as officers in FFA back then. Fact is, everybody has a very good life and is very involved in community. I mean, it's not just these kids. This FFA's been doing this for a long, long, long time. And you should all be very proud of the organization you're representing here.
And we got a few more from outside. I knew there was another group in the overflow group, and I just felt it was nice to have an opportunity. So, and did you want to speak as well? You can grab that chair on the end and come on up here with your friends. Very good. Okay. Thank you for being here. Absolutely. Whoever wants to start.
Okay. Well, I just really want to point out that...
You have to give your name.
Oh, my name is Josiah Cruikshank, and okay. I'm with the Bend FFA chapter. And one big thing is FFA really has changed my life, but I've also seen it change a lot of people within my chapter. And I live on a semi-rural area outside of Bend, but there are a lot of people inside of Bend with places that they live that are not as nice as I would hope. And their lives have really been improved and affected for the better by FFA. And they've really grown as leaders, as I've seen over the past year and a half now. And they've grown, whereas before they weren't even able to stand up in front of the class to make a statement. Now they're public speakers at a sectional level. And that's been huge for them. And it's really changed my life too, for the better. So I definitely think that FFA is a really important part of the school system, and it's really helped so many people that I know.
Thank you. And you don't have to get too close to it, so that's perfect.
For the record, my name is Keegan Gibbs. For me personally, I remember for the first time I went and spoke in front of a big group, I was in the fourth grade, and I was so nervous that I got sick to my stomach and I had to leave. Now, I'm a sophomore in high school, and I can speak in front of 150, 200 people, still a little nervous, but still pretty comfortably. And it just has changed my life for the better, for myself and people around me. And not only has FFA affected me personally, it affects our community. One thing that our chapter does is we have chickens, and we get all the eggs from the chickens, and we take them down to the center, and we give them out to people in our community who can't afford, and we feed some of the less fortunate families. And it's just what our FFA chapter does for people personally and for the community as a whole. That's why I think FFA is a great organization. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
For the record, my name is Emma Rooker. I'm also from the Bend FFA chapter from the Central Oregon District. 3 years ago, I lived in Arizona, and my family decided to make the move to Oregon, and the FFA organization was the first thing that really welcomed me as an individual and as a high school student into the community. And if I would have known the person that I am today 3 years ago, I probably wouldn't have believed it, but that's because of the FFA. My first 2 years of FFA were extremely involved in speaking, in public speaking with the FFA creed, livestock judging, ag sales, and all of my goals, as I was reflecting a couple of weeks ago, all of my goals in those first 2 years were about me, how far I was going to get on in a judging competition, the place I was going to get on a public speaking. But what FFA does is it teaches us who we are and what we're good at, but it also teaches us how we can use those gifts to better other people. And so FFA instills in a spirit of service. It gives us space to kind of step into the fullness of who we are and shows us how we can help other people. And so you're not just investing into the Blue Jackets, you're investing into the future, into future servant leaders, because that's what FFA is really all about. It's an amazing organization, and thank you for supporting it.
For the record, my name is Morgan Oram. I'm from the Ion FFA chapter and Blue Mountain District, and I'm really just going to be reinforcing what everyone else has had to say today. The Ion FFA chapter is fairly new. We're going on our third year this year, actually. And I come from a farm background myself, agriculture background, but I was I wasn't really sure what to think about ag classes and FFA when we first got it introduced to our school. So you could say my ag teacher kind of forced me into the classroom. But since that first day of ag, I haven't had any regrets. I've taken every opportunity the FFA has given me, as well as my chapter and my district and the friends I've made through the FFA. And all I can really say is that it's a really positive, uplifting leadership and extremely the best program I've ever participated in. And thank you for your support.
Thank you. Any questions for this group? You did an exceptional job of explaining who you are and how this program has worked with you. So thank you. And thanks to all of the people that have participated so far. So thank you.
Thank you.
I'll look around. I don't see any others. But this time, actually, when I asked, people came in. That was good. So any statements or concerns from the rest of the committee? I don't see anybody else coming. So I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 230. Just so people know the process, and many of you have gone through all the kinds of training and stuff, this bill has been heard now. The next step is that it has to get posted for a work session. In a work session, we actually have to take a vote on it. This particular bill delegates money, and so it has a separate pathway. So bills that are about just policy would go to the floor of the Senate, and we'd have a vote there, and then we'd go to the House, and we'd go to a committee, and so on. But this bill, because it has a financial and a fiscal to it, is going to go to Ways and Means if and when it passes this committee. So that's another committee that is looking at our budget and trying to figure out how does this all fit into this thing. Our voters passed I guess it would be a policy, but they passed last election a bill, what was it? Measure 98, which is referenced in the bill. It was said, how are we going to improve graduation? How are we going to get kids technology? All of those things. And so as we figure out how we're going to pay for that, this would be a part of the conversation about one of those things that could meet the requirements of that measure. If in the Ways and Means, which is a joint committee, so it's made up of, as our person said, Greg Smith that came in here, he's one of the co-chairs from the House side on that big committee. After it goes through those committees, if it gets voted out, it goes to the floor. And since it started out in the Senate, it will come to the Senate floor first, then it goes to the House floor. If those two groups pass it, then it has one more stop on its way out the building. That's to meet with the governor and have the governor sign it. So it's still a ways to go. You can watch that process online. There's a number of ways to get online to look at it, what's called OLUS, and follow that. And I encourage you to see where it's at. Anybody who didn't speak today, if they would like to introduce their own written statement about FFA and have it on the permanent record here in the state capitol, they can send it in. You can send it to our office, and there's a ways on the capitol to see that. So there are other ways to participate. And while you're looking at OLUS, you might want to look and see if there's other bills that are of interest to you that are something that might be important for you to be supportive of. And we appreciate the ability of citizens, wherever they are in the state, to get online and watch. So hopefully your families back home knew you were going to be here today. They could watch this whole thing online. And get involved. Keep being a part of the system. So thank you all for being here today. Any other comments? Then we're going to adjourn. I'd already stopped the meeting. So we're going to adjourn the committee, education committee today. And yes, go ahead.
Can we take a picture?
You can. We don't mind pictures, but if you want a picture with other people in it, I'm just giving you a bad time. So, yes, when we close the session, we can come up and make a big circle here if you want, and we would be glad.
We still need to close the public hearing.
And I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 230. I thought I might have done that, but now I know I have. 230. I thought I